You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, what you just heard was a warning. A warning that right now doesn't make too much sense to most of you, but over the next few years will become increasingly clear. Everyone in America knows that there is something terribly wrong. They can feel it in their gut. Every time we turn around, some new restriction is placed upon our life, upon our business, upon our children, upon our purchasing power. Have you ever asked yourself why it is that in the greatest nation that has ever existed upon the face of this earth, with the most opportunity, with a constitution that guarantees and protects individual creator-endowed rights, where anyone can rise to the ultimate ability of their own desires, ambition, or needs? If you ever ask yourself, why is it that every year we just get poorer and poorer? And in a country where one person used to be able to earn enough money to feed the entire family and clothe the family and house the family, now it takes the husband and the wife, and sometimes the children, to accomplish this same exact feat. What, ladies and gentlemen, has gone wrong in this country? Well, we will explore some of these things tonight and every night on the Hour of the Time. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
Never in human history has so few taken so much from so many as America's Illuminati and their warlords of Wall Street and Washington. In just 8 years, these banksters and international government gangsters took us from the greatest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation on earth. Our standard of living has dropped like a rock for 4 out of every 5 Americans. They have foreclosed on our homes, our farms, our factories. They've exported your jobs and surrendered our arms. You to be a slave from birth to grave. The banksters own the Federal Reserve. It's private. They own it. It's neither federal nor a reserve. The cashists make that fiat funny money stuff you call dollars for 2 pennies. They lend it back to us at full face value. Then charge you interest, so you get the debt. They get the interest. They get the gold.
You get the crap. They want it
all. A new world order. A new world order. A new world order. It is a big idea. It is a big idea. CFR controls the CIA, the FBI, the ATF, and the FDA. They don't give a damn about the POW and the MIA. Hillary, Billary, Hitler, Marx, and Mao. They want a new world order. They want it all. And they want it now. This Illuminati imports the dope. They create the chaos. String us out and crush our hope. They created AIDS. It's their designer disease to bring you down, to grovel on your knees. They want to vaccinate your child and give them the mark. They want to illuminate you and keep you in the dark. They want you to pay for it with plastic, surrender your soul. They want you under their thumb,
under their control. They want it all.
A new world order. A new world order. A new world order.
Everybody thinks that maybe George Bush just coined that phrase off the top of his head, but not so, ladies and gentlemen. It's been bandied about throughout the history of the world. Hitler talked about a new order of the world. Some of his underlings actually used the term New World Order. And I could, in fact, go on and on and on. However, I want to cover tonight some important information, I believe. And so, as soon as I figure out what I've done with these CDs here, I will get to that. Okay. Now I know what I did. In the beginning of human existence, according to the Bible, God created man, and he created woman as a companion to man, and he placed them in what the Bible calls the Garden of Eden. In this garden, there was a tree that bore fruit, and it was called the tree of the fruit of knowledge of good and evil. And God forbid Adam and Eve to partake of the fruit of that tree. And he told them, if ye do, ye will surely die. And he appointed Adam and Eve to be the caretakers of the garden, and of the trees and plants, and of the beasts and animals and birds, and of the earth. But there is an esoteric version of what happened at that time, and it is a metaphor, ladies and gentlemen, the people who expound this story do not believe in God, they do not believe in Satan, they do not believe in a devil. It is their story of the theory of evolution, and it's exactly where that theory comes from. It is known in the esoteric language of the mystery schools, the fraternal organizations, if you will, the secret societies of the world, as the Luciferian philosophy. You see, they believe that man was held prisoner in the Garden of Eden by an unjust and vindictive God, and that man, in his innocence, existing and rooting about upon instinct, was at the mercy of nature, of the elements and of the beasts, and of the terror of the night. Lucifer argued with God about the condition of man in this Garden of Eden and was flung out of heaven. Lucifer went in the personage of Satan. Some say that Satan is the servant of Lucifer, and seduced Eve to partake of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and Eve in turn seduced Adam to do the same. And the argument that Lucifer used to cause this to happen was that God had lied to Adam and Eve and was withholding from them their true nature. And since he was withholding from them their true nature, and was, according to Lucifer, holding them in slavery, bound in the chains of ignorance, he was withholding from them their true destiny. And the promise of Satan was this: God has lied to you. You must eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and if you do, you will not surely die, but ye will be as gods. And so Eve partook of the fruit, and Adam partook of the fruit. And according to this esoteric metaphor of the mystery schools, Satan bestowed the gift of intellect upon man and upon woman. The Bible calls it the fall. In the esoteric language of the mysteries, it is the rise. Rise into the potential of godhood, the apotheosis, if you will. And through the use of this intellect, man himself will become God by overcoming the forces of nature and the beasts of the field, and leaving that state of innocence and that perfect balance of nature, and creating the Tower of Babel, ladies and gentlemen, which is representative of society and civilization. Many people read those stories and never understand them. I am not commenting, ladies and gentlemen, upon which is right or which is wrong. I am just telling you that it is what it is. I have told you what the Bible says and what Christianity believes, and I have told you the metaphor of the esoteric teachings of the mystery religion of ancient Babylon. And That is what they believe. Satan is represented as Prometheus. Prometheus, remember, was the bolt of lightning flung from the sky, is the messenger in the ancient mythology. The gift of fire to man by the bolt, represented by the bolt of lightning striking a tree, is the representation of the gift of intellect and the beginning of everything that has followed hence. For without fire, there would be no civilization, there would be no industry, there would be no society, there would be nothing. And some ancient man, according to this ancient mystery religion of Babylon, saw this lightning, saw Prometheus bring this gift and strike the tree, which began to burn, took a branch, and learned how to keep that fire alive. And even today, ladies and gentlemen, even today in the modern mystery religions, there is the ceremony of maintaining the eternal flame, the flame that is never allowed to die upon the altar. It was in ancient Mesopotamia, ancient Assyria, ancient Egypt, ancient Rome, and it is today. In fact, the adepts of this mystery religion scoff at us as they maintain the eternal flame burning upon the sacrificed king whom they killed in Dealey Plaza in Dallas, Texas, on November the 22nd, 1963, John F. Kennedy. The mythical satanic bringer of civilization to Earth was supposed to be some sort of alien from the star system Sirius, as one story goes, around whom the ancient Egyptians and all subsequent hermetic systems of these secret societies constructed their elaborate and obsessive religio-astronomic observances. This star, ladies and gentlemen, known as Sirius, also served as an astronomic secret code, an allegory of the illusory quality and inherent trickiness of what is known as the material world. In astronomic magnitude, Sirius is approximately 35 times brighter than our sun. In fact, it is regarded as the greater light in the highest occult circles as analogous to the hidden god of the cosmos. For just as the star Sirius's true magnitude is dwarfed by the sun of our solar system by means of this illusion generated by distance, so too, ladies and gentlemen, is the influence of Satan in the world obscured behind a welter of churches and lip service to the teachings of Christ. The emblem of the all-seeing eye above the unfinished pyramid is in fact the representation of the eye of Sirius and of its omniscient surveillance, which literally means, in the exoteric world, and that means what you, the profane, can understand, there are adepts and initiates everywhere, and they are watching you. It would be extremely difficult to exaggerate the fanatical degree of attachment the priesthood of Egypt and all the subsequent related hermetic traditions had and still have for the star Sirius. You see, the entire calendar year of the Egyptians was based upon the rising times of this star. The heliacal rising of Sirius, ladies and gentlemen, was so important to the ancient Egyptians that gigantic temples were constructed with their main aisles oriented precisely towards the spot on the horizon where Sirius would appear. The light of Sirius would be channeled along the corridor due to this precise orientation in order to flood the altar in the inner sanctum as if a pinpointed spotlight had been switched on. This blast of light, focused from a single star was possible because of the orientation being so incredibly precise and because the temple would be otherwise in total darkness within. In a huge, utterly dark temple, the light of one star focused solely on the altar must have made quite an impact on those present, especially the initiates, are those present to receive an initiation. According to the astronomer John A. Eddy, the rock circle located near Lovell, Wyoming, known as the Bighorn Medicine Wheel, is aligned with the rising of Sirius. And you can find this in the article called Astronomical Alignment of the Bighorn Medicine Wheel in Science, issue of June the 7th, 1974, where it says, and I quote, "The heliacal rising of Sirius was also important to other ancient peoples. Here is a description by the ancient Greek poet Aratus of the rising of Sirius, often known as the Dog Star, as it is in the constellation Canis, or Dog. The tip of his, or the dog's, terrible jaw is marked by a star, that keenest of all blazes with a searing flame, and him men call Sirius." Throughout Latin literature, there are many references to the dog days, which followed the heliacal rising of Sirius in the summer. These hot, parched days were thought by that time to derive some of their ferocity and dryness from the searing of Sirius, which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is the brightest star in the heavens. Further on in this study, you may see that a key ritual sacrifice intended to imprint the group mind of the masses of the 1970s. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, I said the 1970s. The Son of Sam serial murders involved the orders from a dog named Sam. The later capture of one of the killers in the cult, a man by the name of David Berkowitz, coincided with the coming of the dog days of summer in August 1977. In Satanists and 33rd degree Freemason Albert Pike's 8th degree of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, the focus of worship is on the blazing star as symbolized by the pentagram, and Pike identifies Sirius in his Morals and Dogma as the grand builder of architecture. John Mitchell said this, "The alchemists aimed to recapture the spirit of Mercurius as the mobile agent in their operations, and they spoke of fixing it using the imagery of the stake driven through the earth serpent, by which means their predecessors, alchemists of elemental cosmic forces, had attempted to raise the subtle spirit of the earth. All these good people shared the noblest ambition to invoke again the golden age on earth. No doubt, in time, they did much to promote human convenience and comfort, and civilizations have been humanized by such efforts. But their falls have thereby only been delayed. For the human spirit, like the spirit of the earth, is a natural wanderer and does not forever accept domesticity. Attempts to fix nature's volatile principle will always be made, and the spirit may, for a time, accept the ways imposed upon it by human nature in its material aspect. But sooner or later, it will prefer its own ways and will take them, whatever obstacles are put in its path." And that was taken from The Earth Spirit by John Mitchell, or The Earth Spirit, published by Crossroad Publishing Company. So, we observe that Saturn and his Golden Age architecture, both mental and physical, came only after the end of Eden. After Saturn, Sirius, had separated the unity of heaven and earth by means of his fateful sickle. So what do we have behind the cover story about a worker's paradise in the Soviet Union? We have the sickle, the very occult symbol of the bisection of heaven and earth, the very symbol of the destruction of Eden by demonic accelerated material and temporal decay, and most important, false philosophies which generate division, a la Hegel, between humanity's sense of itself and identification with God's divine creation under the cover of slogans of unity. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, we have a grotesque mockery of the very principle touted. This macabre arrogance borders on the clownish for those initiates or self-initiates who have the wit to see it. And I hope that you do. Have you ever noticed how television and print media will scream themselves hoarse in news, documentaries, editorials, and heavy analytical pieces about rising pornography, crime, violence, gunplay, etc.? And yet, in the very same TV guide announcing the very latest special on the crisis of sex and violence in America, will appear an advertisement for Miami Vice, the show that brings you the action and excitement you've come to expect, etc., 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 ad nauseum.
That goes down in every kitchen to determine who will serve and who will eat. From the wells of disappointment where the women kneel to pray for the grace of God in the desert here in the desert far away. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Newspaper, ladies and gentlemen, take a good look at it, especially the Arizona Repulsive. But it doesn't have to be in Arizona. There's one in every state. In fact, there's two in every major city. And if you'll check, they're both owned by the same corporation. One professes to be liberal, one professes to be conservative, and the population is fooled that they have a voice. And that is how news is controlled, and that's how you're manipulated. It's no different in Phoenix than it is in New York or Boston or Chicago or Los Angeles or anywhere else. Your newspaper will condemn sex and violence in the loftiest terms, but right there in the entertainment section is a half-page advertisement for a new action movie accompanied by a photo of women in string bikinis and high heels fondling automatic pistols and machine gun phallic symbols. You see, right there in front of you is the official attack on sex and violence. There is the official attack on Satanism. And yet, you need not be Sherlock Holmes to detect that the very themes which Orthodox officialdom condemns with its right hand its left hand, counterculture, officialdom disseminates. There is a man, Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino, whom I exposed in my book, Behold a Pale Horse, who works for United States Army Military Intelligence. He is also the leader of the Temple of Set, a satanic church characterized as satanic by the official orthodoxy of the system. Michael Aquino, in a letter to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch of February the 6th, 1989, responded to attacks on his organization by a supposedly scandalized culture that is itself satanic. And he said this, quote, "If teenage gangs may experiment with what they believe to be occult rituals, blame should be laid squarely at the feet of the media which glamorize occult violence to youth. I specifically refer to the movie industry with offerings of increasingly gory and violent splatter films such as Nightmare on Elm Street with its child molester hero Freddy, Halloween, Friday the 13th, etc. Note that such films usually include several sequels also targeted at children, and Freddy now has his own weekly television series, and parents wonder where children are getting all their bizarre occult ideas. Please turn on your television sets any evening or examine even the PG horror movie offerings at your local video store, much less the R category." End quote. That's how Michael Aquino justified his leadership of the Satanic Church, the Temple of Set in San Francisco. The mechanism of prissy 6 o'clock TV news show put-downs and exposés with the little Barbie doll and the little Ken guy sitting there, of the very satanic sex and violence which are lustily celebrated on the same channel on their 10 o'clock movie, is sheer hypocrisy of the most blatant and perverse form. It's not concealed at all. Yet, ladies and gentlemen, we cooperate with it. We do. We are its prey, and we consent to be preyed upon. We lift up our chins so that our throat is exposed, so that the wolf can more easily sever our jugular vein. Both sides, light and shadow, have magnetic attraction for us, and that is the failing of the human nature. Everyone likes to say that, and this is what I really loved about Flip Wilson, he brought it home to us, those of us who would listen, "The devil made me do it! Oh, the devil made, I would never have done that, but the devil laid his hands on me, the devil made me do it!" That woman never made anybody do anything, ladies and gentlemen. We did it if we did it. You did it if you did it. I did it if I did it. And that's the truth. The official orthodoxy simply allows us to indulge our good sense about ourselves as people who can still be outraged. That makes us feel better about it. Meanwhile, the establishment's official counterculture allows us to indulge our guilty pleasures, as they are once again openly referred to by a pair of syndicated TV movie critics, and I'll let you guess who they are. Pleasure, as distinct from joy or happiness, is almost always enhanced by the patina of the forbidden, and having reassured our persona of our essential goodness by sharing in the condemnations promulgated by the official orthodoxy, we can then fling ourselves headlong into guilty indulgence of the very themes we agreed were execrable when condemned on the nightly news. Amazing, isn't it? You want to know the cities where pornography sells the most? You want to know the cities where pornographers make more money than any place else? It's cities ladies and gentlemen, where pornography is totally and completely outlawed. Why? Simply because of human nature. We are sorely tempted by that which is denied to us. The collective occult schizophrenia, or mass insanity, if you will, extends to Judeo-Christians who condemn Satanism as a concept when presented in church forums, television chat shows, and police seminars, but who relax and divert themselves with satanic television and videos. There is a good and evil side of everyone. You show me anyone, anywhere, I don't care who it is, and I don't care where it is, who is the pillar of the community, who has never done wrong, whom no one could ever suspect of ever indulging in anything bad or evil or pornographic or seditious or anything you wish to name. And I guarantee you that if I follow them around with a television camera concealed for 6 months, what I could reveal to you from that little excursion would probably destroy your community. For everyone has something they're hiding in their closet. Some fault, some defect, some temptation, some evil deed that they have done years ago, and maybe that they have repented and would never do it again, but it is there lurking in the shadows nevertheless. And if there is such a person who has not been tempted, who has not fallen into bad companionship, who has not performed some deed of which they are grossly ashamed, then maybe we have missed the return of Christ. And I don't think we've missed anything, ladies and gentlemen. Modern people are fascinated with exposés of sex, violence, and Satanism, and fascination is itself a form of mind control. If we recognize that oftentimes obsessive treatments of these themes under the guise of exposing them are the very means of inducing interest and involvement in the occult, in sex, in violence, in Satanism, in crime. Do you think people really watch cops because they want to see how the police do their work? You know, you might foist that explanation off on somebody. That's stupid, but don't try it with me. Because I know, and so do you. And I won't listen to your lie. You watch it because you see what is forbidden to you in the guise of something that is legitimate to view. People who never hear about Satanism, extreme violence, and extreme pornography are unlikely to become involved with Satanism, violence, and pornography. And the extent of their temptation and the skeletons that they hide in their closets are similarly reduced in magnitude. Those who fill their heads with morbid fascination, with lurid media depictions of evil in the world, under the pretense of putting an end to such evil, are actually, ladies and gentlemen, part of the process which precedes its wider acceptance. The film The Exorcist is instructive in this vein. Under the guise of exposing Satanism, it brutalized its audience with pornography in a powerful occult milieu, and many of them have fallen into its wider temptation. Roman Polanski's popular Hollywood film Rosemary's Baby was also presented from the vantage of supposedly exposing the danger of Satanism, but has accurately been called the very best advertisement for Satanism ever made in history, an allegory of the birth of the demonic eon. Polanski has himself been implicated in child molestation. It has also been alleged that he videotaped pornography involving children and animals for sale to a private network, possibly in association with Charles Manson, whose followers ritually sacrificed Polanski's wife Sharon Tate and her unborn baby. They knew exactly where they were going that night. Tate herself may have been involved in the occult, possibly the Process Church of the Final Judgment, a satanic group which Manson was also associated with. For reference, see the book Painted Black, Harper and Row, pages 115 and 116, and also another book, The Manson File, pages 168 to 172. You see, we document everything on this broadcast. Of course, no matter what her affiliations, Sharon Tate's murder was still a heinous crime. It is a heinous crime even if someone volunteers to be the victim in a human sacrificial rite upon an altar. It is still a crime. A heinous crime, a terrible loss of the potential of a human life. I find it interesting to note that while much is made of the murder of her unborn baby as being the most horrible part of the Manson gang's occult violence, women who pay physicians to kill their unborn babies are not regarded as guilty of any satanic act, heinous or otherwise, and yet in my estimation, in my belief, and I believe in fact it is murder. Was the sacrifice of Sharon Tate's unborn baby somehow a ritual precursor of the coming mass sacrifice of unborn children, which was subsequently legalized by the United States Supreme Court? The media puts us on intimate terms with Satan by immersing us in his spectacular electronic videodrome kingdom. Was it by some sort of television that Satan tempted Christ? The devil showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. All these I will give thee if thou wilt fall down and worship me. Luke chapter 4 verse 5, Matthew chapter 4 verses 8 and 9. The double mind. The profoundly disturbed mind at war with itself, and ignorant even of that fact, is a characteristic of the scapegoat patsy, lone nut, cult killers, and of the American people in general. For in this time frame of ours, we are initiated into their cult solely by means of our exposure to the electronic videodrome, and thus our prospects become the same as those of David Berkowitz, Mark David Chapman, Arthur Brimmer, James Earl Ray, and many others. In the 19th century, the phenomenon was termed Masonic apoplexy. Today, ladies and gentlemen, it is called zombieism. Isn't it amazing? And we have families, ladies and gentlemen, who live together, sometimes even work together, sometimes play together, but have never talked to each other. Oh, yeah. Get up. It's time to get up, Johnny. Okay, Ma. What's for breakfast? Bye. See you later. Folks, that's not talking. Before the age of radio, and I go back that far because that was the beginning of the alienation of human beings from each other, people talked to each other. They spoke to each other. They communicated their feelings. They loved. They did things together. Communities met together. There was a time when people would sit upon their front porch so as to more easily be able to communicate and talk with their neighbors. When someone came to visit, they did not turn on a radio or a television set. They sat in the parlor and talked to each other. They conversed and they played games and they expressed humanity. When radio came along, much of that changed, although there was still a great deal of communication between people and amongst family members. There were times when everyone sat in complete utter silence listening to the radio. And I can remember when I was a boy doing exactly that, allowing my imagination to run rampant, listening to radio shows such as The Whistler, The Creaking Door, Suspense, Let's Pretend, The Lone Ranger, Sergeant Preston and his dog Yukon King, Hopalong Cassidy, Gene Autry. Oh, those were wonderful times. Oh, you bet they were. And I don't know any young child who would not have reveled in those episodes of suspense and intrigue and adventure that opened up the world to us who lived in a very narrow quarter and had no idea of anything outside of our little realm. And that was the beginning of globalism, whether you realize it or not. And then came television. And now people don't talk to anybody at all. It's all stopped dead in its tracks. We'll continue this tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen. Good night. And God bless each and every single one of you.